Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Nutrition Network. Today, we are so lucky we have Henrietta Norton, who is the co-founder, I believe, or the CEO, whatever you call yourself, Henrietta, of an amazing brand called Wild Nutrition. And Henry's going to tell us all about that. But, I mean, I think what's a little unusual, if you like, is that Henrietta is very much one of us and so really understands, I think, some of the issues, possibly, that led her to starting this company. But before we go into all of that, Henrietta, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Kate and everyone.
So just tell us a little bit about, you know, you and how you got started in practice or your training and sort of the basics of the start of Wild Nutrition.
Yeah, okay. So, yes, I'm not the CEO of the company. I am the founder and nutritional director, and it's actually my husband who is the managing director. So it's very much a family business. We started 7 years ago. About 7.5 years ago now, literally from the shed in our garden. So it was a very kind of organic growth business. And the reason why that came about is because I've actually been a qualified nutritional therapist for 14 years and spent 7 of those years working for in the supplement industry doing their research and development, so product formulation and looking at ingredients and opportunities for product formulations in the market. And alongside that, I was also working in clinical practice. So I am very much one of the tribe. I know the sort of the peaks and troughs of being a nutritional therapist. We were saying earlier, weren't we, that, you know, it can be a very kind of isolating game. And this is why something like the Nutrition Network is so important, because it kind of brings us all together. And really, really the reason for starting Wild Nutrition in the first place was because, very, very briefly, you know, my experience in practice showed me that there weren't the products that I was looking for in clinic to work with the women that I was working with, because my area of speciality was in women's health and particularly endocrine health. But also my experience in the supplement industry and looking under the hood of the supplement industry made me sort of I was sort of in pluralistic ignorance at what went into the supplements and how supplements were made. And once I lifted the bonnet and my 7 years of experience there made me realize, actually, this is not what I want to be giving to my clients. And the way that the nutrients were made, to me, was an enormous compromise and not something that I was willing to give to the human body for healing. So that's really how it started. I was writing a book on endometriosis, and the editor said, you know, I would really like you to recommend some products to go alongside the book. And I said, I just hand on heart can't do that. There's nothing that I would say would be something that I'd be willing to kind of endorse. And that really sowed the seed, because I just thought, I know how to formulate. I know there is access to more natural forms of nutrients, and I'm going to put some products together to sit alongside the book. And so that was the birth of Wild Nutrition 7.5 years ago, and it's changed quite rapidly since then.
Well, yes, I mean, I think actually, I know it's a very superficial thing to start with, obviously, but it looks so nice. I mean, I think this is the thing, which is, I know that seems really kind of, as I say, starting as the most superficial thing, but I remember sort of like when I first started as a nutritional therapist 20 years ago, sort of very, and if I had been brave like you, I probably would have done something about it, but remembering sort of looking at even the way that the product or nutritional supplements were sort of packaged, almost like pills, pharmaceutical pills, and it's nothing felt very attractive about taking them. And actually, since it is an optional thing to take a supplement, really, you need to get people bought into that it is something precious to take. And although that seems superficial, I'm sure that's a huge part of it. Would you agree, or is it?
I would wholeheartedly agree. And actually, that's the very reason that my husband got involved as well. So he's from a more kind of creative background. And he said, if you're going to do it, we're going to make it look really good. And so he was doing it, you know, because he wanted it to be aesthetically pleasing. But also, there were two other very, very important factors which you've sort of touched on, is one of which is that really to get compliance is very, can be very, very difficult in, with, you know, between client and therapist. And one of the ways to get compliance is for the, like, it's like having a liter of, you know, a bottle of water on the table. It makes you drink it if it's in your eye view. So if you have a product that you're willing and happy to put on your counter so that people can see it and it looks very beautiful and doesn't destroy the kind of feng shui of the house or whatever it is that's important to you, if you see it, you take it. So you get greater compliance that way. And then the other factor, which was so very important to me, always has been, and now is very trendy to be so, but there were no, I didn't want to use any plastics. So that was an out-and-out rule. I will not use any plastics. I will not use any excipients. So the packaging had to be in glass bottles. And so already there is a sort of a premium look to it. And I also wanted it to reflect the research and the time and the kind of curated acumen that was going into the products as well. So I think if something looks a little bit too, you know, pretty, and then it can just look like it's a few lovely herbs that have been put together, you know, literally in a shed. And I wanted it to represent the hard work that had gone into it and the research that had gone into each and every formulation.
Yeah, there's a gravitas to it. And there is a real, you know, isn't there? There's a gravitas to the packaging. And also, as you so rightly say, I do feel sometimes, you know, if I'm taking supplements and what was I taking the other day? And I just chucked away a whole plastic tub and I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this. You know, it's really starting. And I think really for most people now, might have been quite unconscious a few years ago that, you know, as you say, 7 years ago, probably wasn't even a glimmer on anybody's horizon. But now it's really, you can't justify it all.
You can't, no. We have to take responsibility. We have to take responsibility as individuals and we have to take responsibility as a business. But it's actually, it's about that environmental responsibility and consciousness. But it's also about, you know, the information was there that, you know, 7 years ago that was showing us that plastics can have an impact on endocrine health. So, you know, some of the compounds that are found in plastic goods do have a measurable impact on women's health. Now, if I'm creating supplements that are to support a woman's return to balance, particularly in the endocrine system, then, you know, how counterintuitive is it to use a plastic bottle? So that was really important for me.
Yeah, well, it looks beautiful. So obviously that is, I think, a real plus point. And I think especially, you know, again, I'm probably going to be very sexist here, but especially as obviously lots of women are buying the product and, you know, and it feels like it's not designed for an aesthetic, you know, as you say. I mean, it's a superficial thing saying, oh, it doesn't look very nice on the counter. But, you know, it doesn't look very nice on the counter and it starts to look cluttered. And actually, if something looks nice on the counter and you're more likely to take it that way and the compliance is there, then you're just, you know, job done. You know, you it's really making presumably a difference. Can you measure that or is this something that's more instinct than, I mean, it's my instinct says this, but have you had the difference in data or anything, or it's just like
in terms of compliance?
Well I know from anecdotally,
I mean, I've stepped away from practice in the last few months just because the projects at Wild Nutrition have been so vast, so I've stepped back a bit from clinic. But when I was working, you know, very busily in clinic, I do know that people were remembering to take the products much more, so this is anecdotal evidence, much more so than the average. But also we do have a very, very high, I mean, something like a 70% returner user statistic, which means that basically people are remembering to take the product. They are taking it every month and they are using the full 30-day supply within 30 days. So that says a lot. That says that the product works, but also that they are remembering to take it.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing because obviously, you know, if 70% are reordering, and you can see that them repeating on that timescale, and it must say that they're taking it. That is interesting. So let's wind back a little bit. And, you know, you mentioned obviously that you are a nutritional therapist and, you know, but it's a huge great thing to start, obviously, to just be there and sort of say, gosh, I can't recommend a product, but you know, and then thinking, well, I'll create my own. Were you, obviously, luckily, you have a husband who obviously you've given the responsibility somewhat of the business end of this, and you're the product end of this. Is that a right, correct interpretation?
Well, I think as a business...
So you've got a good partner, in effect.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's about having a partner, and I think they get to a certain point in a growth stage of a business where you actually have to say, rather than doing a multiple of different things within the business for us to say, actually, do you know what, this is the bit that I'm really good at, that's the bit that you're really good at, and hang your hook on that. So Charlie very, very much keeps the engine running, you know, in-house. And my role is better used, my skill set is better used to obviously formulate the product, do the research and development, and also go out and, talk about wild nutrition and educate, which is the bit that I absolutely love as well. So, and we've grown an amazing team around us, a team that is just so completely passionate about what we do as well. And I think if I was to give one piece of advice to anybody thinking about starting a business, it would be to employ people that share your passion, but also that are, you know, better at you, better than you at the things, you know, that you almost want to invite, skill set into the business that you don't have. So, because none of us are a jack of all trades, we need to kind of understand where
and that,
you know,
can
where
be difficult for
are.
People, can't it? I mean, you
it
know, they don't want to let go of, you know, if, especially if it's your sort of baby, and then you're handing a whole section of it off to somebody.
Completely.
It kind of can feel, and especially if they're better at it than you, you know, it's
yeah.
like it can, you know, you have to be careful with your own psychology that you don't make that mean something, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's exactly the point, is that I think it can be a problem if you let yourself get in the way of it. But really, at the heart of wild nutrition is a deep want and need to get really fantastic products out into the public arena, and so that as many people can take it for healing as possible. Now, if that is your mantra, then there is no space, there is no time for you to think, oh, gosh, you know, that person's better than me at this. We should be welcoming it, and we do welcome it, because anything that helps us to achieve that mission, that goal, is, you know, is somebody that we want to hold hands with. It's just a matter of letting your ego step to the side. You know, I think it is one of the areas that a lot of businesses fall down on, where they think that the business is about the person as opposed to the intent and the
so
mission.
So there you are on your kitchen table, your shed bench, kind of getting started in wild nutrition. So did you start off with a plan, i.e. a sort of like, right, these are our values, this is our mission, or did you sort of very much sort of let the whole thing evolve from that space, and then the whole strategic thinking came afterwards?
So when it took about a year and a half, 2 years to actually set up Wild Nutrition from the start of us having, from me having the idea. In answer to your question, it was it all happened at different stages. So initially with the book and the seed being sown there and thinking, right, I would really like to make, there were three formulations that I'd done, which is now makes up our Total Cleanse program. And that had absolutely no structure, had no business plan, no strategy. It was just something that I wanted to do to put alongside the book. It wasn't necessarily intended to be a kind of business, certainly to the degree that it is now. But then through the sort of 18-month, two-year period when we were kind of putting things together, it became increasingly clear to us that there was going to be a need and a demand for more products along these lines. And that therefore, if the range was to get bigger and we were to aim bigger, that we were going to need some structure. So, but right from the get-go, there was this mission statement that was to, you know, to support a woman's return to balance through natural means and using uncompromising ingredients and creating uncompromised products. So that has always been at the heart of it. It got a little bit more strategic and became a business plan, I think probably a year down the line. when we realised actually we actually spoke to somebody who it was a friend in common who'd worked in various big companies, and we actually went to him and said, listen, do you think we're mad? This is what we're thinking of doing. He was a supplement user himself. He was actually a customer of an old company that I used to work for. And he said, I don't think this is madness at all. I think it's absolutely genius, and I think what you're doing is fantastic, and I think you should go for it. And those were, and actually his greatest words of influence were think big, because even if it's not necessarily thinking big of kind of world domination, but more about the structures that would need to be in place, because if you get the structures that are required, the infrastructure of a large business within a small business, actually that really helps to kind of separate a lot of the wheat from the chaff right from the beginning. So there are certain kind of infrastructural things that you can put in place, including a business plan, that can be really helpful.
I think because we're involved, as women, we're involved in health, I think our instinct is to play the, you know, which is a nice thing, because obviously, I was going to say, we play a team game. So we don't want to, in effect, be, you know, sort of lording it over everybody else by saying, oh, we've done all this, you know, like we've set up this business. And it's very hard. I find it very hard, you know, in my small role to sort of say, okay, well, you know, I don't know, I'm going to do things differently, or I'm going to put my head above the parapet and say different things. And actually you feel like, oh, you'd be much more comfortable having a cup of tea with everybody and being, you know, but in effect, in order to serve, you have to, I mean, this is a bit esoteric, but you have to sort of, in order to serve, in effect, the end patient, you have to step up and do something bigger than you perhaps really
absolutely
are comfortable doing.
Absolutely.
If that makes
it is
any sense.
Oh, it makes absolute sense. And it is about service. And I think, you know, I think I really don't mean that lightly. It really is a service that you want to provide something. I think for me, the reason why Wild Nutrition actually got off the ground in the first place is because it became more uncomfortable for me not to do something than it became for me than the discomfort of sticking your head above the parapet. So I'm not a natural, I'm not somebody who naturally likes to get up and lord about at all. It's more that I felt somebody has to do something about this. You know, I mentioned earlier about pluralistic ignorance. You know, just because the mass are doing something in a certain way doesn't mean that it's the right way. And, you know, I didn't look under the bonnet of the supplement industry prior to going into the industry. It was only my experience in the industry that made me really acutely, disappointingly aware of what goes on and how the products are made, and then also an understanding of biochemistry and how the body uses it that made me think, I can't actually sit back and be quiet about this. I want to do something that I know that I would be willing to give the patients that I work with, that I care about, that I would take myself and that I would give to my family. And I think the other thing is that it's not about, I certainly didn't start a business to say, look at us, we're bigger and better. It was more that this is something I believe in. If you would like to know more about it, I'd love to tell you about it. And if you share my view, I'd love to give you a product to support your health. That's how it was. It still is. You know, it's not about, you know, that everybody else is rubbish and you're the only amazing one. I think that's really important, because then you're starting from a place of ego, and that doesn't help anybody.
So when you're, I mean, obviously, you know, I think we probably know the answers to all this, but do you feel there's a need, you know, if somebody has got a very good diet and all the rest of it, you know, obviously as nutritional therapists, we do supplement, so we get that one out of the way. But do you think that we kind of over-supplement? Is, you know, really, if we've got a great diet and, you know, do we need supplements?
I think, yes, we do. You know, my training, and I'm sure yours too, Kate, was that it comes from diet and a really good, robust, rounded, varied diet with as natural, you know, eating food as close to nature as possible is the starting ground for absolutely everyone. And what supplements are not are a replacement for that. You can never replace that. We, you know, our DNA is attuned to receive all of our nutrition from food. But the reality is, and this is not just hypothetical anymore, this is, you know, this is now grounded and quantified, our nutrition, the nutrient density in the soil and the nutrient density in our food is significantly less than it was just even 50 years ago. So I know that there was a recent DEFRA report that looked at the trace minerals, for example, and showed that there were 50% less trace minerals in the soil than there were 50 years ago. Potatoes lost, 57% of its vitamin C and 28% of its calcium. And it's affecting, it's not just about, you know, our the kind of primary micronutrients either. It's about secondary metabolites and bacteria. And I mean, you know, the impact is, we don't know the full impact of this kind of nutrient deprivation in the soil yet. You know, there's going to be a lot more evidence coming out, I'm sure, about it over the years.
Not least for the animals. I mean, you know, animals, the other animals, like we're the fat-storing ape animal, but, you know, not least for everybody else on the planet. It's not just about what we eat and our health. It's presumably planetary health, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a corporate nutritionist, whatever that means, but I do education in companies. And actually, what really, really... and I did a TED talk. I did, luckily, an internal one, so nobody can see it on the wire. So thank you for that. But it was still very scary to do. But I wanted to do one on soil health. I wanted to do this talk on soil health and the connection between the microbiome. And they have this, curating council, basically. And they all sat around going, do you think people understand that? It was just when the World Health Organization said there are 60 more harvests left until the topsoil fails. And that means like, do you think people will get that? Do you think I will? Can you do it on breakfast? Like, so, you know, it is. Have you seen a shift in mindset of people to sort of understand this connection between obviously supplementation and meaning we're having to supplement because something is lacking from the diet, even if you're eating an organic, fully fledged everything diet? Or do you see that there still isn't that connection there between the whole holistic picture going back to the soil and health of the planet?
I think there's a wonderfully growing awareness of it, which I think is fantastic and to be celebrated. I mean, you know, and actually even in the last year or so, that the awareness has increased. I mean, I think the rise of plant eating and veganism is a sign that people are becoming more aware of our connection with the planet and how what we eat and how we live can impact on the health of the planet. I think the awareness is certainly greater than it was, and that's fantastic. There's a long way to go still. We get a lot of calls from people. I mean, you know, I suppose we've got a very kind of a limited reductionist view on it to some degree, because we get a lot of calls from people who are already engaged in wellness. So the people that we deal with in customer services, you know, we have a lot of people calling us saying, I know I need to take a supplement, but I don't want to take a synthetic one. I want to take a natural one. Can you guide me? So, you know, we are dealing with people who are already dialed into it. But I do think that there is a wider awareness now. I also think that, unfortunately, as with all of these things, as they get greater awareness and attention, it also means that it becomes more open to criticism. So, you know, we are getting a lot of journalists that are trying to unpick. You know, they're forever bringing out that SELECT study on antioxidants and how, you know, taking supplements increases death and all of these things. So actually, to answer your question about are we over-supplementing, I would wholeheartedly say yes, and it is a genuine concern of mine, particularly around vitamin D, and I know I'm probably going to get bombarded with a whole load of researchers who tell me otherwise, but, you know, the research that I've done has shown that we are at risk of over-supplementing on vitamin D. So, you know, I think that it's as with food, it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality, and it's how well your body responds to that. Whatever you are putting into your body, how well your body responds to it is the most important thing. So, you know, and that's how I view the forms of the nutrients that we use in our products as well. It's why we use what we do. But going to your point about the affecting animals, I totally agree with that. I think that, you know, there was, in fact, I think again it was with DEFRA, wasn't it, when there was a TB outbreak with in cattle, there was an independent researcher, I can't remember now, it's gone off the top of my head, but she highlighted that she, her conclusion was that she thought that zinc, the deficiency in zinc, cobalt and selenium in the soil was the issue with the, how widespread the TB is. Cattle, because they
that, and then what they do is kill all the badgers. You know, it's like, you know, the badgers probably haven't got anything to do. I mean, anything to do with it. If the whole ecosystem worked better, the badgers have been around for, you know, they haven't suddenly contracted TB and giving it to cattle, have they?
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It's much more likely to be something further afield. But I think it's just like the way man looks at, looks at things. I'm not being sexist there. But mankind looks at things as we tend to look at them in silos and not join the dots.
But that's the paradigm of scientific inquiry to date has been that, hasn't it? It's been very a very reductionist view. So,
well, yes, but science, as you know from the field you're in, you can just interpret the science, and especially nowadays, I don't know if this is just, again, the sort of channels I listen to, which obviously are only highlighting, you know, so they're only highlighting probably when science is hijacked by people who've got only commercial interests at heart, in effect, and then can spin the science anyway, which way, you know, I mean, like sugar or, you know, all of these things.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a commercial interest in the product, it's very difficult to separate yourself, and you always find somebody scientifically who can back up what you're saying, and
exactly.
You know, it's very difficult to sort of, it's, I don't believe the science now, but it's very difficult, you know, obviously there's rigorous scientists out there doing research, and why isn't it their voice getting heard, or they're doing their independent research which isn't joined up to the whole, so they're getting it's like looking at a giant jigsaw puzzle of Buckingham Palace and only having the flagpole in, you know, and not making sense, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's why, you know, we as therapists and as consumers, because we're all consumers as well, we need to work with many different areas of ourselves to influence our decision. So it's not just a rational decision, it's also an intuitive decision. And this is an area actually that I again feel quite strongly about with nutrition, and the training in nutrition is really empowering the therapist to work intuitively as well, within reason, you know, if they just get a gut feel that this is the right route to go down, don't ignore that. That can be really influential and often.
Yeah, that's a big, big thing with me. I think, although, again, I'm not practicing currently, but absolutely that intuition, which, you know, I think as we go, you know, and there's nothing kind of wrong with it, going down the sort of really functional medicine methodology where it's all tested and double tested. But, you know, years ago when I was in clinic, I remember just the patient coming in, and she was in a partnership she'd been in for years, and I just looked at her and she said, I've done everything, can't get pregnant, and I was thinking, and I looked at her, I said, have you tested for chlamydia? She went, no. I said, I've been in this partnership. I said, just go and test for that, just put my mind, and of course, she had chlamydia. I don't know how I kind of knew that or why I settled for that. But it's
so powerful, isn't it? It can be a very, very powerful influence if used
absolutely.
Correctly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I could have been wildly wrong, of course, but it's sort of just like this, it's about that listening, really listening to the patient. And I think, you know, again, I think that's how in medicine generally, things kind of took a turn to the worse. In the old days, the doctor would examine you for whatever, for half an hour, you know, tapping on your chest and with his stethoscope out and all the rest of it. But now it's kind of, it's too much on testing and computers and taking the human out of it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think you can miss a lot with that, definitely. Yeah.
And also
it's about
empowering.
That practice.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also part of the role as a therapist, and also with something that, you know, is very important to us, we have wonderful Lorna who works on the phones here at Wild Nutrition. She's a very experienced nutritional therapist, and equally the message that I give to her is that, and she's very good at it, is encouraging, giving people the information to empower them to use their intuition with things as well. So, you know, even with your clients in clinic, is it, you know, really encouraging them to listen to, well, what is it that you think might be going on with your body? What do you think might support you in, you know, in what do you think is the right thing for breakfast? Now, sometimes that can be something that they do need educational support with, but also they need to be empowered to listen to their own body, because ultimately we are all our own best doctor.
Exactly, you know, and I think that's the thing, which is passing everything off to an expert is all very well, but it's just, you know, in effect, taking supplements is an attempt by most people to take responsibility back, you know, and put the health back in their own hands, and sometimes they don't know what they're doing, but that's where we can be a guide, but more like a partner than a
facilitator,
you know, practitioner,
Mm.
Well, what was I going to say? So did you, in terms of the business, did you, or perhaps you're not aware, or perhaps you are aware, do you have a set of principles? I mean, you mentioned, of course, about your mission statement, but beyond that, do you have, either in your heart or ones you know, sort of values that you're operating to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest thing that we put everything under the microscope of integrity and whether or not the product is uncompromising. So it's very easy to say this, it's very easy to give lip service to this, but we will not do anything without the right integrity behind the product and the right intent behind the product. And that might mean that we use ingredients that are maybe harder to source or, you know, more expensive to source. If it makes the product how we want it to be, then we will use it, so we don't cut corners. Traceability is incredibly important as well, so knowing the supply chain all the way through is very important. I think one of the most important things as well within the company is, this is slightly digressing, but it's, you know, everybody within our team, there's not a hierarchy here. You know, that it's everybody within our team is of enormous value to the growth and the success of this business and to the right energy behind each product. So, you know, looking after our staff and ensuring that everything is kind of energetically sound in the business before bringing out a product is really important too.
Well, is that based on some kind of, you know, that sounds quite Eastern, philosophy-wise, or is it just something that isn't necessarily into, does that mean you're into yoga and other sort of energy medicine, or is it just like a coincidence and that's just how you are?
You know, my whole approach has always been very holistic. So even though my training is, you know, in nutritional therapy and I've done the functional medicine training, actually, I'm also a qualified yoga teacher. I am very interested in herbal medicine, very interested in meditation. There are different, and Ayurvedic medicine. So there are lots of different areas of medicine that I am personally very curious in. I don't consciously bring them into my practice or into the product, but I can't. It is a wholehearted reflection of me. The products are a wholehearted reflection of me because I formulate them. So by default, they will be influenced by those traditions as well.
So what was I going to say? Can you tell us perhaps a little bit about? I was going to ask you really about your worst business kind of scary moment and your best business moment. Does something spring to mind?
Oh, my gosh. Well, there have been many. I mean, that's ignorance is bliss. And like I said at the beginning, you know, we didn't intend to set out and create a kind of, you know, world massive supplement company of any sort to take on Solgar or anything like that. Ignorance really is bliss. We were just doing something that we felt very strongly and passionate about, and we were obviously doing it and saying what we were saying at the right time. So that means that as a result, we came to it quite ignorant in many ways. We'd never run a business before. I mean, I'd worked in, you know, in businesses and in industry and had to follow a particularly professional route, but I had never run my own business, nor had my husband. So we have made, there have been lots of potholes along the way, and that's why I say it's really important if you're ever thinking about starting your business, of bringing in the skill set that you need to support you. I would say that my biggest mistake was that we got into bed with somebody in a distributor in Europe, which went very, very badly wrong. And this is a case where there was too much trust and not enough due diligence on our behalf. So that was a very big stinger, and that was very, very frightening at the time. The biggest ups, you know, my gosh, I mean, I'm so grateful for where the business has got to almost every day, really, honestly, hand on heart. That is so true. I mean, the fact that it was Charlie and I sitting in our shed in our garden, not making the products from our garden, but from, you know, we're using contract manufacturer, but, you know, to think
that's
we
a relief,
there,
you know, it's just like you're shoving old bits of snail in.
Exactly. Around the chicken. But yeah, you know, there have been so many ups, you know, even in our, so we launched in January, and by March, Whole Foods had called us and say, we really like your products. They've come across our bows, and we would love to put them across all of our stores. You know, amazing moment. You know, just every day is amazing. And actually, I have to say, to date, still the things that really, really rock my boat is getting the feedback that we get, you know, when people, particularly when we work in, you know, because we work in women's health and we work with pregnancy and fertility and very emotional areas for women, and the success rate that the product seem to support so many women, and it's just so lovely when they feedback to us. That is always an amazing moment. I think in terms of a more sort of general mistake, would be that I, Kate, but for the sake of anybody who doesn't know, who may be listening, I've got three children, and two of which were born along the journey, and that has been a really tough juggle. I have to say, I have to be really honest about that. There's nothing glamorous about it. It's very easy to think that if you start and run your own business, that it's a very kind of glamorous thing. It really is not. There's been a lot of sweat, blood, and tears. And so I think one of my biggest mistakes was that I didn't invest enough into my own self-care. And I certainly got very close to, if not got to, adrenal burnout. And I sort of slightly kicked myself at the time, thinking of all the things that I know, how did that happen? And it's very, very easy for it to happen, actually. And so I would say that for anybody who's starting that, and actually I would say even if not starting a kind of business per se, but you're a nutritional therapist, looking after yourself, finding your boundaries, finding your downtime, finding your quiet space is so incredibly important, because actually that's the energy that you bring to your clinic or your company or whatever it might be. You bring that energy with you. So you've got to be engaged in your, with your whole heart, and in a good kind of mental, physical.
And do you think that would, I mean, because I remember at the beginning when I started with the nutrition coach, my clinic in which is run by the very able and wonderful Hayley Pedrick now, but it's in Harley Street. And, you know, this is 20 years ago where people didn't have clinics in Harley Street, and I completely went for it. You know, meaning that same kind of, and it's different clinic thing, but I was so ambitious for the nutrition coach. I mean, beyond ambitious. I mean, not in a, hopefully in a horrible way, but I would have.
I think it can be in a passionate
Harley
way.
Street.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Yes, but I think you don't realize at the time. I mean, literally, I'd have done anything to get patients in and to promote the clinic and blah, 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 you know. But you don't realize you're in that burnout. You know, and also that sort of push is probably the thing that gets you over the line, and then to build the self-care in that. Just, you know, now I do it, but I have some blocks in that I won't let go of. Like I do qigong, which is a bit esoteric, but you know, I do various blocks, but that I don't let go of. But when I get busy, I feel I do let go of them easily, you know, because I'm still pushing, even though I don't mean to, you know. So
yes,
is it
absolutely.
Character sometimes? That just says,
yeah,
you know,
I think
so when you build in that self-care, then what you're doing in my mind is like fasting around. So it's just like, you know, it's just a mindset. And it shouldn't be like that. But,
yeah,
you know.
Absolutely.
I think learning to say yes and no is a big one. I think that's probably, is that true for you? Sort of just like at the beginning, you just say yes to everything. And, of course, that does waste a lot of energy. And as you mature, you can see that you can say no to things. Then you've got a block of time for that self-care.
Absolutely. I mean, the irony is that I think that when you have more space that's generated through self-care, you are in touch with yourself, you reconnect to yourself and you reconnect to your gut, you reconnect to your intuition, and therefore it's much easier to say yes or no from the right place. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean? Rather than...
Yeah.
Because I think it's very easy... Yeah, and it's very easy and overwhelmed to go, yes, 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 or I'll do it. It's much easier if I do it. And also because, like you were saying, it resonates with me wholeheartedly. It's when you are very passionate and something driven and excited about something, you just, you know, yes, it's a character thing, but also it can be very, very easy to get swept along with that and your feet slightly, not leave the ground in a sort of egotistical way, but they leave the ground in that you forget to just pull it back and reconnect. Because actually, you know, I can only speak from my own experience, but I work very, very differently when I'm connected to myself. I might be slower, but I'm a hell of a lot more productive. So being busy, we're sort of obsessed and we sort of generate this busyness in the modern culture that we have. And I remember I have a meditation practice and a yoga practice, as I said, and the meditation teacher that I was working with said to me, I said, oh, you know, I've been meditating every day and I'm feeling really good. And he said, you don't need the meditation when you're feeling, when you're not in a good place. You need the meditation. That was a bit of a slip. It is medication for me. You need those acts, and those acts of self-care when you are in a good place. Because if you do them in a good place, they become part of your habit so that when life speeds up again, because it does, it ebbs and flows all the time, it's harder to hold on, to grasp on to those aspects.
Yeah, and then you're so far down the line once you realise you do need the self-care, if you know what I mean, saying, oh, my God, I'm overwhelmed. I probably should get back to that yoga. I probably should get back to that qigong or whatever it is. Then it's too late. You're already down the track, you know, and have lost a lot of time, you know, and waste and spent energy kind of having yourself in knickers in a total twist.
Completely.
And I think it is also I think it is also a character thing from my point of view that I don't, you know, not, you know, sounds like really egotistical, but it's kind of like I don't believe that I would be susceptible to adrenal burnout. Like, I mean, it's like that is something patients have. I don't have that thing, you know, so you do really have to be careful to realize that actually, you're a nutritional
knowledge
therapist.
Isn't everything. You have to put it into practice and you have to be it to spread it. You know, you have to be what you want to see. Like if one of my employees here was to come and say, I've just been burning it. And I would say, what are you doing? Go home. I want you to go and rest. But I wouldn't necessarily do that to myself. And I think particularly when it comes to business, you know, this is, again, a bit of a generalization, but with business, you tend to have those that are creators and then you have those that are doers, and you need an equal balance of the two. Now, my role and my kind of natural instinct is as a creator. So in order for me to be creative and really tap into that part of me, I need to have that self-care. Otherwise, the communication gets a bit fuzzier.
Well, so what, you know, if you can you name any of your favorite products in your range? If you can narrow it down.
Do you know what is such a hard? I do get this question quite a bit, and I think it really depends on either the season or the week that you might be talking to me. I might say a different answer because I do kind of go with it very, very seasonally. At the moment, I have, if I'm allowed to mention two, I would say it's the Ashwagandha Plus, which I just
I love Ashwagandha.
Think is in it's incredible. The KSM 66 ashwagandha that we use has a, you know, it's one of the most researched forms of ashwagandha, and it is incredible. In a sort of more esoteric way, it enables me to feel much more grounded. But I also have noticed that it has an effect on sleep. It has an effect on resilience, immune resilience. It has implications in fertility. And we've got, it's combined with our magnesium as well, which is another very, very beautiful mineral. So that would be one of my favorites. And then also our Terma Forte turmeric, which is a whole spectrum turmeric, again, has fantastic clinicals on it. And that's one that actually for me is not seasonal. That one is an all-round one for me because it's obviously supportive for liver function and immune support and moderating inflammation, but also it's great at supporting the COX-2 inhibitors. So, for any pain that's associated with, say, premenstrual tension or endometriosis or polycystic ovarian syndrome, I used to use that quite a lot in my clinic for those purposes too.
Well, fantastic. I've got a couple more questions because we're sort of coming near to the end now, but just a couple more questions, which this is, and I'll put you on the spot with this one, so if you don't nothing comes to mind, please just skip it. But what's the book that you've given away to most people?
Oh, gosh. Well, I can tell you what it is. Soul, Soil, and Society.
Oh, me too. I love it. Kumar.
Beautiful.
What's his name? Satish Kumar.
Satish Kumar.
Do you know what? I'm so cheesed off. I've lost my copy. Somebody has.
Oh, Kate, I'll send you one. I've got heaps of them.
Oh, have you?
Because literally.
I borrowed it from a friend who very sweetly, and somebody has nicked it. I'm so distressed about this. And it is my favourite book. Everybody read this book. It's absolutely amazing.
It really is. So beautiful. And actually really, really brings together all the things that we were just talking about our connection with the soil and the earth. And, it's just beautiful.
And small economics. And, unfortunately, it was halfway through. So, I'm not hinting, but honestly, thank you so much. I'm not going to say no, but so if I find my copy, I'll let you know. But it's disappeared.
I'll send you one because I have a little bulk that I give it, for Christmas and things like that.
Oh, it is. Then we share that because it is the most, and he's got, obviously not him, but the Ecology magazine and
Resurgence. Anyway, yes.
Resurgence, yeah, absolutely. So, I'm a big fan as well. So that was not planned, guys. I didn't know that.
No, it really was.
And if you were going to put a message out that everybody in the world could read, something pithy and short but that would change lives, what would that be?
A book or anything?
No, just a message. So imagine a giant billboard. I'm just stealing these from my favourite podcaster, by the way. So if anybody's recognising these questions, I'm nicking them. But it's a kind of like a message that you could either simultaneously broadcast to everybody or a giant billboard that people would see with a message on it. What would be your message?
God, that's such a good question. And this is a really, I hope everybody knows, none of these questions have been planned or answers have been planned. So I'm just going to leap in and say, I would say, live from your heart. That's the most.
Well, that's a lovely
thing
to say. Absolutely. And from that comes that instinct as well. And, all of those things that we're saying that actually sometimes gets ignored there. Sometimes we're so much living from our head. And our head tells us so many things we can't do. So it tells us so many things we can't do. As opposed to from our heart, we are making connection.
And we're building
networks.
Yeah, and we're doing it authentically as well. And I think that is so important. I think we all know we can feel it when something is authentic or not. And when you really live from your heart, you can't be anything but authentic.
And when you're looking forward now, sort of last question coming up really, but when you're looking forward to the future while nutrition What do you see? What will be different? What will be the same? You know, what are the plans?
Our plan, you know, the plan has always been the mission has always been the same and will continue to be the same. What I would love to see is greater access to our products globally. So at the moment we're very well positioned in the UK. We get a lot of attention and increasing amount of traffic globally, but I would like to be able to service that better. I would also like to be able to service the educational side of it better on our site. So, because if it's on our website, then globally anybody can access it. So I think it would be doing what we're doing, but just doing it to a wider, on a wider scale and staying true to our heart and our mission.
Well, listen, Henrietta, it's been absolutely lovely to chat to you. If anybody wants to find out about more about what... Actually, what we didn't talk about was, of course, sorry, which I was just about to end, and now I'm not going to, but just one, which we've missed out the fundamental thing, which is, of course, your nutrients, I believe, are food source, aren't they? So what is the difference, and why is that so relevant to as compared with most... nutrients, which obviously are chemical derivatives in their entirety.
Well, that's very sweet of you to ask that right at the end.
Yeah, exactly. I forgot about that.
So did I. We're not very good at this with PR stuff, are we? We do. You're absolutely right. We use, and this has been the sort of one of the founding principles of Wild Nutrition and why we make the products in the way that we do, because the majority of nutrient forms that are used are highly processed and highly synthetic, which means that I'm sure that any of your audience will know that a vitamin is not a one fraction, it is a complex of different fractions that are bound, metabolically bound. So a little bit like a jigsaw puzzle, it's got all of the pieces together. Whereas if you are synthetically reproducing that in isolated forms, you're producing just one of those little jigsaw pieces. And it became more and more apparent to me that that was both a very, very unnatural way to produce the nutrients, but also a very unnatural way for the body to receive nutrients, because the other components of the jigsaw puzzle are equally as important, even if they haven't been defined by researchers having a physiological activity. They're very, very important in telling the body how to use that nutrient and serve a purpose in the metabolic processes in the body. So when I was researching putting together the formulations for Wild Nutrition, I knew that I didn't want to use these synthetic forms, and I started to research other ways of producing the nutrients, and came across a company in America that produced a nutrient in a naturally bound form. So effectively what we do is we take a food pulp, and we will take the end nutrient that would be found in, you know, some of our competitors' products, that isolated form of ascorbic acid, for example, and we will introduce that into a kind of citrus pulp and allow it to metabolize so that it gets recreated back, reformed into the jigsaw puzzle, effectively, to make it really, really simple. Because It's the same process as we would find in food. So when you have, you know, the root system of your plants in the soil, you have inorganic lone compounds in the soil, and what the plant does is it draws that up through its root system and kind of metabolizes it so that it becomes part of a metabolically bound form within the plant. We then ingest that plant, or the animal ingests that plant, and we ingest the animal. And so that plant has done that metabolic conversion for us. If we were to just eat that synthetic, inorganic isolate on its own, our body won't know how to work with it as effectively. So what we're doing in the food growing process is we're actually recreating that natural system with the plant. So we're introducing that isolated nutrient into the plant. The plant then converts it. And once we know that it's converted, we will then harvest it, dry it, and encapsulate it. So we grow each nutrient differently. And what that means is, or certainly what the research has shown, is that because of the greater natural affinity with the body and the body's ability to be able to use it and absorb it better, that lower doses are needed. So it works you know, much more naturally with the body. And if you think we've been talking about our interconnection and interdependence with our environment and the food and our physiology, and we are a complex weave of systems, so too are nutrients. It's a little bit, you know, to me, the way that the greatest way of explaining it is that, you know, there is a vast difference between processed foods and whole foods, and so too is there a vast difference between processed supplements, synthetic supplements, and the more natural forms. So you ultimately, what you get at the end of the process, because we're not using any heat or any solvents to during the process either, you get a very natural, effective but low doses that are formulated with all the different compounds that are necessary for the body to be able to absorb and utilize the nutrient. We place a lot of emphasis in the supplement industry on bioavailability. You know, it's a really big buzz term. Actually, what it means is the focus tends to be on how well it transports across the gut. But for anybody who knows about sort of human metabolism and biochemistry, you know that getting it across the gut wall is really only the start of it. It's like getting into the airport. It's brilliant. You managed to get on the bus and get into the airport, but you haven't gone through customs. You haven't gone through passport control. You haven't got on the plane. And all of those things are, you know, whether or not it's transported efficiently in the blood, whether it's retained or stored in the liver effectively or metabolized in the liver effectively, and how well it gets into the cell and is communicates and how well it communicates with that cell intracellularly. So, and that's where, I mean, you know, the results speak for themselves with the food grown material. It's just absolutely phenomenal.
So, well, you see, I'm glad I asked that question right at the end. But I realised there was something I was missing asking there. But yeah, so that is the big difference, and I think, you know, that you've got something to hold your hat on to, haven't you, in terms of the difference in wild nutrition and what it is you're so passionate about, as opposed to it just being a supplement company. It's something that you, as a practitioner, have seen works and that you believe in.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, good. So what I was just about to ask was, if anybody wants to find out about more about Wild Nutrition, presumably they go to wildnutrition.com, is it?
That's right, yeah. They can go straight to the website. So that's, yeah, wildnutrition.com.
And is there a contact, or you mentioned actually a practitioner contact, didn't you, at Wild Nutrition? I mean, can people got technical questions they can ask, or can they go to somebody?
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. That's a really important part of our service, actually. So we'd be delighted for anybody who wants more information. We do training calls, or if you've just got sort of, you know, just general inquiries for yourself or for your clients, then we have wonderful Lorna who's there Monday to Thursday. And you can either email inquiries@worldnutrition.com or you can call our office number, which is 01263 477 898.
Fantastic. And thank you so much for connecting. You are in beautiful Lewes, I believe. So
yeah.
Sunny Sussex today. And we wish you all good luck with the business. And sure, you don't need it. And just to say thank you so, so much for sparing your time today. And good night.
Oh, Kate, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.